Oh, great. Well, thanks everybody for coming. I'll be super brief. My name's Steve Spahn. I work at the Massachusetts Library System. There's my boss right there. Everybody wave to Greg. Massachusetts Library System is really pleased to partner with BiblioLabs, represented here by Mitchell Davis today. And we're here to really, we're out in the exhibit area in booth 14 under Commonwealth eBook Collections to talk about our statewide eBook program. And a major component of that is the self-publishing initiative. And we've got three of our self-published authors here, and I'm going to let Mitchell take it away. So thank you for coming.
Thanks. I just want to echo Steve's appreciation for being here. It's a really great honor to be able to bring these authors to more people's attention and the wonderful books they've written, and also just talk about some of the innovative things we're doing here in the state for indie authors. We're going to do a kind of informal conversation, let these guys tell you a little bit more about their publishing journey, sort of how they got to here. I'm going to ask them a few questions, and at the end we'll have about 10 or 15 minutes for Q&A for you guys to be able to ask questions also. But before we, if you go one more, yeah, but before we got started, I wanted to real quick just do a quick check-in on how the indie publishing movement is beginning to affect the publishing industry, because it's been a pretty quiet revolution that I think probably started back in the late 90s, 2000, with the advent of print-on-demand, when print-on-demand first came along, and now people could publish their book and not have to do long print runs, and that eventually with the launch of the Kindle segued into ebooks. And it's only very, very recently that the impact of all that has begun to hit the industry in a way that we can really, really know what that is. So I just want to real quick, people know who this guy is? If you raise your hands. Yeah, so this is an interesting thing. So Hugh Howey is, I don't know, he's sort of a case study in how an author can kind of take control of their own writing career. And he published his books directly to Amazon in both print and e, and has sold over 5 million, I think now, copies of those books, probably between six different books. And when we were first thinking about how we were going to work with libraries and indie publishing, I saw him give a talk to about 400 authors where he told them that they should hope that people are stealing their book. He said, you should hope your book is so interesting that people would want to steal it. Because if that's the case, you may be an interesting enough writer that you can actually make a living as a writer. And it was just a really odd thing to hear. But I was like, there has to be a better way to accomplish what he's getting at, which is you can't be a successful writer and have a writing career without a base of readers. And so how do you build a base of readers and then have those readers be your evangelist to other readers? So that's really what we've set out to build. And I want to ask another question. Does anyone here know the website authorearnings.com? Has anybody seen that site? So this is a guy who 2 years ago built a web crawler that could crawl the Amazon.com website and pick up small changes in book rank and all sorts of different things that are public facing, and he could make determinations from that on what was actually happening in the ebook market, because if Amazon famously releases no data about anything really. So he has over 2 years, this system has gotten smarter and smarter. He's gotten better and better at it. And the most recent report that he published showed that in the last 2 years, and you can actually go to the next slide real quick too, just another representation of that. In the last 2 years, the author earnings from Big Five published books has been cut in half. And the author earnings from self-published and indie books has doubled. And for that to occur in a 2-year span is really a canary, I think, as far as like where the industry is headed. And so it's presents a really amazing opportunity for libraries to get involved in this new emerging world and figure out how they add value and how they can participate in that. So I think the other interesting thing about what he's doing is he's reoriented the whole industry to not measuring the health of the book industry by publisher profits, but by actual author earnings, which is agnostic to how you actually publish the book, depending on what the different royalty percentages are and all those sorts of things. So that's something that also has had a lot of resonance with libraries, that we could begin to think about the whole health of the industry, not in terms of quarterly profits for big publishing companies, but in terms of what are authors actually putting in their pocket from publishing books, which is pretty cool. So this is that data, and it's great to be able to stand in front of this data now and show definitively with data that this is a real movement that's happening and happening quickly. You can go to the next one. This is just the same in a bar graph, and so you can see if you put together that 5% and that 47%, it's well over 50% of the books that are Indian self-published now. You can go to the next one. So again, I just mentioned this, but it just presents a whole new way for libraries to work. So the way just to give you a quick overview of how we're working with libraries here in Massachusetts and across the country, is we've built a system that lets indie authors upload their ebooks. And when they upload those ebooks, the books very quickly become available in the local library. So it solves that problem of how does a library easily take files from local authors and make them available to patrons? But once we receive those books, we also have a partnership with the Library Journal, which is sort of the gold standard review resource for librarians, where Library Journal curators actually look at the books and select the best ones. So it becomes a reader's advisory of sorts of, we know there's a lot of self-published books out there, but here are the ones as Library Journal we think you should engage with and that we think are the best. And so we've had about, I'll get to this in just a little bit. You can get to the next one. So this is, what we're doing is using ebooks as an on-ramp to create better relationships between authors and librarians. So the library can be inclusive of everyone in the community as an archiver of books. And then once Library Journal has selected the best books, and all of these guys were selected by Library Journal, that's why they're here today, as being some of the best self-published books in the country. Once the Library Journal has sort of put that stamp on a book, the library can know that this is one of my best local authors. I can promote this book. I can try to get patrons to come read this book. I can invite this author into the library to do readings and signings. And so it's a real confidence booster for both the author and the librarian to develop a whole new kind of relationship. So we've got selfie ambassadors that go out and do events. And so we become invested in trying to make sure that people know about these authors and know about these books, because it's good for the whole program. Because anyone who's written a good indie book says, wow, I would love to have Library Journal recognize my book and be on a stage at Boston Book Festival. So we're very invested in trying to create visibility opportunities for those authors. So this is just some numbers I thought would be interesting to share with you guys, that we've had almost 6,000 titles submitted to the program in about a year and a half, which is pretty good. And about 600, a little less than 600 of those have actually been selected for Selfie Select. So it's about a 10% acceptance rate to the program, which, I don't know, in my gut feels about right, that about 10% of the self-published books would be worthy of note. And we've got over 300 libraries, 3 states, including Massachusetts, using it. We just produced an event on October 8th called Indie Author Day, where we had over 300 libraries across North America all promoting indie author library relationships. So. And this, I think, is one of the key values of the program, which is that Library Journal did a survey about 2 or 3 years ago where they surveyed library patrons and found out that people who check out ebooks from libraries and read ebooks in libraries are, in fact, avid, voracious readers who are not only good word-of-mouth marketers of books, but they also buy books. Over 50% of them said that they had gone on to buy a book from an author that they had originally discovered in the library. So this is what we're trying to tap into, this idea that libraries can help you find readers and that can translate into book sales. And this is just a little bit of a shot of how we do that. So, you know, if you put one of these books into the Selfie program, we can actually help you sell other books that are in that series and send people directly to your website and things like that. So that's how that works. So that's it. That's kind of the grounding. I just wanted to give a sense of how the industry was changing before we dove in and got into detail. So now I'm going to move over to the chair and have a quick conversation with these guys. So thank you. All right, testing. So I thought to start, one of the things that would be interesting is just to go through the panel and have everyone tell a little bit about their story, about how they got into this, and a little bit about their adventure and where they are now and where they're hoping to go. And I'd
start with me?
Start, yeah, absolutely.
All right, so I come to writing after a 25-year career as a physical therapist. I started writing my first novel while I was still working, while I had young children at home, and started to literally write in the margins of my life, you know, a half an hour during lunch, on the pickup line. And it took me a year, and I wrote a novel. And thankfully, for all of you, it is still trunked on my hard drive, never to be read. I look at my publishing career like there's this wonderful scene in Monty Python's Holy Grail, where the guy talks about, and I built a castle and it sank into the swamp. Then I built another castle and it sank into the swamp. Then I built another castle and it burned, fell over, and sank into the swamp. Well, it took me until I had written my fourth novel to actually feel like I knew what I was doing. And on the strength of that novel, I was able to acquire a literary agent. And for the next 5 years, she was unable to sell a single one of my projects. And I got the most glowing rejections from Big Five publishers. I had a Fae Portal Fantasy rejected by one of the big guys. And they said, well, if your name was Holly Black, we would have bought this. Okay, I'll change my name if that would make a difference. No. So ultimately, my agent and I parted ways. I did a lot of research. I formed my own publishing imprint. I learned how to outsource things like art because I can't draw a stick figure. I have a freelance editors that I work with, cover designers, cover artists. Learned the geeky stuff of hand coding ebooks because I love playing with computer code, and essentially formed my own publishing company. And this June published my sixth novel. And this year I'm actually on track to have earned the equivalent of federal minimum wage from my writing earnings, which puts me ahead of the game because, thank you. The average author, and this is both traditional and indie publishing, earns, the median author income is $6,000 a year. So I'm actually, you know, after five years of publishing, I'm actually sort of on track, and I'm committed to keep building my audience, and that's one of the reasons why I was so excited to do this partnership with Library Journal.
Awesome. And Glade?
Okay, I hope you can hear me. Okay, that sounds good. My name is Glade Brown-Kabongo. I write in the psychological suspense genre, and I come from a marketing and communications background, and I actually am, you know, still doing that because of what she said. It's not paying the bills yet, you know, but soon, hopefully. And so I started out writing my first novel and then decided to try the traditional publishing route, which meant that I sent out lots and lots of query letters to literary agents and publishers and things of that nature. And I'm still proud of my rejection pile. I still have it on my computer in a folder somewhere. I did get you know, a couple of bites. There was a publisher interested, and the acquisition editor in the end, she just couldn't convince her boss to make the purchase. So I attended the Cape Cod Writers Conference in 2011, and Lisa Genova, you guys know Lisa Genova, right? Still Alice. She gave a talk. She was a self-published author, you know, leading up to that conversation. And what ended up happening to her was she got acquired by a big five publisher, and Still Alice got made into a film. Julianne Moore won her first Oscar as a lead actress for that role. And her story inspired me that, you know, she went out and did that on her own for a bit before she, got traditionally published. And so during her talk and talking about her journey, I said, you know what, I can do this. You know, I really want to get my stories out there and you know, get it into people's hands. And if she can do it, I can do it too. And so I set about, you know, doing that. I used the Vanity Press at the time. It's still a viable option, but now that I've seen the light, I don't think so anymore. So I went through them, and my first book came out. There were a lot of lessons along the way. And after that, I decided, I'm going to just take control and do everything on my own. And what I ended up doing with my second novel was, you know, what LJ talked about, which is I had to hire an editor, a cover designer. Luckily for me, I have a marketing background, so that allowed me to kind of think about that a little bit. Defining a genre, you know, is really important, and, you know, doing the research, you have to do the work. It's a lot of work involved, doing research, figuring out what the market is, figuring out, you know, something is, it sounds simple, but what do book covers in this genre look like? You know, what are the best-selling books in this genre? Go to Amazon and look at all the bestsellers in your genre and, you know, look at the covers, you know, and, you know, get inspired by that. Trying to find a really good editor, one who, you know, understands your writing, understands where you want to go, and, you know, hopefully one who edits in your genre as well. And that has been an interesting journey for me as well. I am actually still looking for the one. As LJ said, you know, I'm trying to build my team, and I'm looking for that editor that's going to be with me for the long term, that has good instincts and wants to develop me professionally and see me grow, you know. So those are all of the things that you kind of think about when you become an independent author. So I'm on my so I have three books out now, and I'm way behind on my fourth and fifth. But you know, it's been an interesting journey, and honestly, it's hard. You know, traditional publishing is hard, independent publishing is hard too. But truthfully, if that's what you're passionate about, and you're really passionate about getting your work, you know, into the hands of readers, and you feel that you have something to say that you want to, you know, share with the world, then I would say you can absolutely do it on your own. The technology that allows that to happen is moving so quickly, you know. And, you know, cover artists are getting better and better. There's software to, you know, lay out the interior of your book. And, you know, a lot of, you know, people who are editors, all editors are not created equal. learned that the hard way. But what I'm saying is the resources available to help you create your book, to help you tell your story, you know, they're available. And they're there, and you can do it and do it well. And it just comes down to really building your audience one, you know, reader at a time. You know, there's a lot out there. Invest in research and just, you know, whether it's following a couple of blogs or, you know, subscribing to a couple of newsletters, you know, whatever the case may be, because it's so very helpful to understand where the industry's going and what's happening there. You know, in terms of your readership, again, it's important to understand the genre that you're writing in, so because it helps you, you know, target those readers. We'd love to believe that everybody's going to love our books, and, you know, as we can tell from some of the reviews on Amazon, that's not true. And so that's why it's important from the beginning to really define as much as you can, who do I want to be my ideal reader? Because guess what? You're writing for them. And that is if you want to, you know, make that your lifelong passion and make a living doing it. That's going to be very, very important to you to understand who those people are. And again, not everybody's going to like your book. And so it comes down to, you know, it's going to come down to the quality, because the people who love your books, they're going to be the ones spreading the word and telling people about you and loving your work. And
it works.
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. So awesome. That's, you know, that's my journey pretty much.
Great. And PJ, you want to add a little bit to that?
What she said.
Yeah. That was great.
I'm PJ Sharon. I write young adult fiction. And I came to writing a little differently than most writers do. I wasn't the kid that grew up saying, I'm going to be a writer someday. And I was 40-ish and went to a financial seminar. And Harv Eker, who's an inspirational speaker, talked about creating passive streams of income and for your retirement. And I said, geez, I have 25 years till I retire. I have time to do this. So he said, you know, one of the ways that you can create passive streams of income is to write books. And you write the book, you put it out there, and you collect the royalties forever. And I said, oh, that sounds easy enough. And I started mulling that around in my mind because I loved languages. I did well in English. I liked to write. I journaled as a teen, and into my young adulthood. And that was a lifesaver for me, journaling. So I started to try to think about what people like to read. And I did some market research, and it turned out that 55% of the book market was romance novels. And I said, oh, I could write about that. And I hadn't really read a lot of romance novels, so I went out, I started reading romance novels. And some of them were awful, and some of them were wonderful. And I could see the beginning, middle, end. I could see the structure of the story, and I thought, you know, maybe I could do this. So it was a couple of months later, and one of my clients, I was a physical therapist for many years, and then I got out of that business and became a massage therapist, personal trainer, and yoga instructor. So I had started my own business. And I was talking to one of my clients, and she said, wouldn't it be wonderful if we could live forever on a beautiful island, and we could have handsome young men do our bidding? And I said, oh, that sounds like a romance novel. And so I had the grain of an idea, and I went home, and I wrote down all my characters, and I started writing, and it was like somebody had turned on a switch in my head, and I couldn't not write. It quickly just kind of flowed out of me. 9 months later, it was like giving birth. I had a 400-page novel. You know, it's like 100-something thousand words of a novel. And I knew it was horribly written, that I didn't really understand the craft of writing, but I got the idea that I could do it. I could go from the beginning to the end and write a novel. And so one of my clients was a retired high school English teacher. And I proposed to her that I exchange with her and I would do massage therapy for her and she would edit my work and help me to become a better writer. And she brought back my novel and it was red penned to death. And she said, you have a lot to learn about the craft of writing. And I said, well, teach me. So she and I proceeded to exchange for about the next 4 years. And I wrote 4 full-length novels before I wrote one that was passable as a novel. It takes years. It takes that 10,000 hours of practice, 500,000 words of practice before you understand all of the pieces that go into creating a good book. And in the meantime, I had joined Romance Writers of America. I had been going to writing workshops and conferences and really just kind of delving into that world. And the feedback that I was getting on my books was that I wasn't in deep enough point of view. And I didn't really understand how to do that. So somebody suggested that I write in first person. So I decided, okay, what would I write? I'll start a new book, and I'll write it in first person. And my first line was, I'm a liar. I know it, I hate it, but I can't help myself. And I was like, ooh, that's deep point of view. That's what it is. It was like, again, the light bulb goes off, and you get it. And all of a sudden, you're passionate again. And you just, you know, I flew through that novel. And as it turns out, I had a 17-year-old living in my brain that had a lot of stories. So I had a very tumultuous teen life. And that particular book, On Thin Ice, was a lot of my story. My mom had died of cancer when I was 16. I found out a week after she died that I was pregnant and had a teenage pregnancy. My son is now 35 and a great guy. But again, I knew that I had a good story. So I started submitting and started doing all the jumping through the query go round and all of that, thinking I wanted to get these stories published. And I amassed a wonderful list of really nice rejections. Don't know where we would put this in the market. It's not exactly what we're looking for. Oh, you have to get rid of these subplots and change this and age your characters up and age them down. And, you know, it's like no longer my book. And I got to the point where I had three full-length young adult novels that I felt were really good, and started to decide, how am I going to get these books in front of readers? Because I had messages that were important for teens to read, and for the teens at heart who love to read YA, you know? So I ended up going the self-publishing route, and I did the same thing with that. I spent 6 months really researching the market, figuring out how to do it as a business. And I decided that, you know, on my pros and cons list, I could keep doing this traditional publishing route and beating my head against a brick wall trying to get into a door this big when thousands of other people were trying to get in that way, or I could be the entrepreneur that I already was. I was already running my own business, and I liked a lot of things about that. I liked the control of that. I liked the flexibility of that. I didn't want to work for anybody else ever again. So for me, self-publishing was a good answer and a good solution. I now have 7 young adult novels published. I've written a nonfiction book called Overcome Your Sedentary Lifestyle, because I've been sitting on my butt for 10 years writing. and my clients all come in with, oh my neck, oh my back, we're all sitting too long. So they wanted me to put all my tips into one book, so I did that this past year. But that's kind of how I got to here, and these guys approached me about when I submitted my books to the Library Journal. They had a self-e contest, and I was thrilled that they picked up my dystopian trilogy. I typically write contemporary young adult fiction, but I had written a trilogy, and they picked it up and really liked it. So here I am.
That's great. I think the common theme that I think. And it's. I'm glad you guys are being so honest about how hard it is, both from a work standpoint and from a just, you know, all of those things that the value the traditional publishers add in terms of craft and attention to detail, those things don't go away. One of the criticisms of self-publishing is it makes it too easy to publish a book. And I think now everyone realizes that even if you choose that path, the editing, the cover, that stuff. And I mean, could each of you speak just a little bit to how important that is in the process of separating your book from?
Sure.
I mean, because I mean, that's certainly something we look for, the books that come through the Library Journal program. I know they're looking for just the overall packaging and appearance and the sort of essence of the whole thing. So could y'all talk a little about that?
I can say that it's probably a good thing that indie publishing wasn't really a thing 12 years ago when I finished my first novel, because I might have been tempted to put it out there. And it really is an unsalvageable mess of a manuscript. I know now enough to recognize what is and isn't publishable. And one of the things that I tell people when you become an author entrepreneur, an author publisher, is that you have to wear all the hats. So there are days where I'm wearing my author hat and I'm writing in this white hot fury of loving the words and the drafting. And then I have to step back, take that hat off and put on my publisher hat and say, yeah, but is that marketable? Can I put that in the marketplace and compete against all of the books that you see in the bookstore and in the library, and will it stand well next to them? And to be able to publish a book that is indistinguishable from the big six is the goal. Because you have so little time for a reader, to capture a reader, and the big three things are your cover art, your blurb about the book, and the first page. Mm. So, you know, how many times do you go into a bookstore and you look at a book and you pull it and you look at the cover and you read the blurb and you open the first page and you know whether you want to read that book or not. So in that 30 seconds, you have to have, the cover has to be right, the blurb can't have any awkward phrasing or typos, and that first page has to rock, or the person will put your book back in the shelf or click onto another page and you will never get that reader again. Yep. And so that attention to detail and that quality just has to be indistinguishable, you know, that know your genre, you know, understand that if you put your book in the middle of two bestsellers in your genre, I write science fiction and fantasy, it's got to look like it belongs. One of these things cannot be unlike the right. other.
Yeah. You know, I agree with her. I had a little faux pas when my first book came out. I was not happy with the cover. And, you know, there are a number of reasons, you know, why that came to be. And I definitely saw that that was a problem. And so what I did, and, you know, that was one of the reasons that I made the decision, you know what, I'm gonna do this myself too. And I had the cover redone. I hired a freelance book cover designer to redo the cover for the book. And the book went to number one on Amazon. And so, you know, they talk about people judging a book by its cover. They absolutely do. They absolutely do.
Especially on Amazon when there's a million right. covers, right?
Exactly. But, you know, it's all of those elements are critical. And I think most writers like to, you know, hunker down and it's you and your computer or, you know, your pen and paper and you go, go, go. But when you are playing in the independent space, yeah, you need to have all of those hats on. You need to be constantly, you know, researching. I listen to a lot of webinars, for example, and there's just so many resources out there. It can get overwhelming, but I think you just kind of need to focus on your goal. So I have a marketing strategy that I put together. Again, because I have a marketing background, I'm always thinking about those things, you know. What does the cover look like? And like LJ said, is it going to hold up against a traditionally published book? I'll go to Amazon and I will look at covers in my genre. I will look at the books that are selling in the psychological suspense space. And, you know, not only look at the cover, but I also look at the blurb, you know. And does it compel me? You know, I'm sure you guys have heard the phrase, you know, write the book you want to read. And I think to a certain extent that is absolutely true. And I've been a voracious reader since I was like 8, 9 years old. So there's a long history of just loving books, and I know what attracts me, and I know what, you know, I find interesting, whether it's at the library, whether it's online. And so, you know, I look at those things, and, you know, I measure my book against them. And that's important. You have to wear all of those different hats. You have to, you know, be thinking about things like, well, how many books did I sell this month? You know, you have to be, you know, looking behind the scenes at, you know, what that tracker is, you know. What can I do to market my book? Because the competition is stiff, because you're not only competing with other self-published books, you're competing with traditionally published authors. Yeah. You're competing with the James Pattersons of the world. I know it doesn't sound like that, but you absolutely are, because you are trying to win the hearts of those people too. So every traditionally published author who's, you know, well known for their journey, you're competing against them too. And you competing, and, you know, I hate to use the word competing, but
for attention, that's, yeah.
You're competing for attention. Yeah, you're competing for the hearts of readers, you know, and readers are very discerning, especially these days, because there's just so much coming at them. There's just so much coming at them. And so it's almost like you feel like you can't afford to make any mistakes, you know, with your cover, with the interior formatting. Everything is an experience for the reader, whether they go to the library and take it off the shelf, and they're looking at it, and they're looking at the cover, and the binding, and the spine, and they're reading the blurb. Oh, that's interesting. You know, they can't be a letdown when they open the book. It's like, oh, I don't like the way this is laid out or whatever. So packaging is absolutely important. And you're always an amateur. And what I mean by that is you're always learning. There's always something to be learned about the craft, and you never stop learning, and I think that's one of the best parts about it. I'm working on my fourth and fifth book, and, you know, I'm learning so much. And you can go back and look at the difference between your first book and your fifth book, for example, and really track your progress as an author and see how you're maturing. But there's always, you know, something to be learned. And I cannot stress enough how important it is to get out there, you know, with, you know, different efforts, because, again, you're trying to gain readers one at a time. And, you know, there's a lot of advice about, you know, online and social media, and that's great, but I think face-to-face still has a lot of value to get out there and meet readers face-to-face and have conversations with them. I think that's absolutely important as well. And in terms of, you know, library journal selfie, I think that's did my mic mess up? Okay, never mind.
I think you can, yeah.
Library journal selfie, for me, I was super excited about that just because, again, I put my marketing hat on and I'm like, this is absolutely fantastic. And not a ton of authors out there have learned about it because it's a young program, but it's a great tool for discoverability and visibility as an author. Again, that library journal branding and being able to leverage that, that's fantastic. And, you know, being able to say to a reader or a reader seeing that on your book, oh, I know library journal. You know?
And librarians, too.
And right? librarians, yeah. Exactly. And if, you know, trying to get your books into the library, we all, you know, want that. You know, that is something that you can absolutely, you know, leverage. So,
yeah, it was interesting. Right before this, so we've been running the program for about a year and a half now, and so people have been reading books, but it was the first time that email I sent you guys is the first time I've shared any usage data with authors, which means, you know, these guys, I figured before we came up here and talked about this that they should know how many people have actually read their books since they put the stuff in the program. And of course, I've been so self-conscious about that data because I have no context for whether it's good or bad, and it's a young program, and really we just have come out of beta with it here. It's just really starting here in Massachusetts, and I was so happy last night. We had dinner, and what's it, like 100 people, 98
people
or something?
Have taken my book out and
yeah.
read it.
And she was thrilled about that.
Normally would have no access,
right.
You know, new right. readers for me, which is brilliant.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I feel it gave me a sense of confidence. So of course, now we want to start sharing more of that data. But, you know, you just need time to build critical mass. Mm-hmm. But it gave me some confidence that we're headed in the right direction and we are putting people in front of books. So it's good to hear that it's working in the way you thought it would.
You know, actually, someone who helps me out as an author assistant, I would have missed Swan Deception was picked as one of the best books of 2016 by you guys, and I would have missed it. I'm looking at my phone one morning, and I went to Facebook. I'm like, what? What is this? You know? And so it's one of those things that you kind of need to keep your eye on because things are changing all the time, and you never know. You talked about you guys working in Chicago to develop this program for the best self-published book in the country, and it's constantly changing, constantly developing various streams, so authors can be discovered. So so that's great.
That's awesome. And PJ, let me change up just a little bit, and then we're going to open up for Q&A. I'm sure you guys have some questions, but could you talk a little bit about the business, like how you think about, okay, when a book is done, how you think about like where you're selling and how you're getting the book to market? I know Amazon is a massive part of that, but is it?
Yeah.
Are there some nuances in there that would help folks understand that?
Yeah, that's a long discussion, but I'll try to keep it brief. one of the things that you ladies touched on was the quality of your product cover and all of that, and I'm just going to go ahead and answer that too because I think it's important. As a self-published author, I have the ability to. It's a very fluid type of business. I have the ability to change my covers anytime I want. Even if you don't have, if you have something about your book you don't like, you can change it at any time. You don't get stuck with a mistake in your book.
Yeah, a stack of books.
A stack of books with mistakes in it. And I think that is a huge advantage as a self-published author is to be able to make corrections like that and re-upload, and in 2 days your book is now error-free, hopefully, if you've had a mistake in it. I go through three full edits. After three full edits with my editor, I have a print book printed out. Because I can then go through the book and read it, and I will change a zillion things again.
It's a different experience.
It's a different experience than online. And I'm sure that as you are reading traditionally published books, you are finding more and more errors in them. And it's because they're doing all of their editing online. They don't print the book out, and you can't see it the same way. So I actually feel like the quality of my books is surpassing, and I think that's one of the reasons why the sales of indie books are going up. There is some, you know, there are self-published books out there that are not very good because people are not doing their due diligence and going through those three edits and a proofread. I could have 10 people look at my book and somebody will still find an error. So that due diligence is really, really important for self-published authors. Once you have a quality product that you are, you know, you're the boss and your name is on that, you know, there's nobody that you can blame if it's not done well. So once you have that and you've uploaded it to Amazon, Amazon's a great place to start. Probably 95% of your sales will end up being from Amazon. But to put all your eggs in one basket is probably not your best long-term plan. So you can upload directly to other sites like Barnes & Noble, like Apple iTunes. There are aggregators, people like Smashwords and Draft2Digital, that are both aggregators that if you upload to their site, they will then distribute it for you to Barnes & Noble and Apple and Kobo and all of the other smaller distributors. And they each have their own platform of ways to get to gain a readership. I don't spend a lot of time following up on those things, only because my sales are not great there to begin with, and most of my sales happen on Amazon. So you have to pick and choose where you're going to spend your time. And marketing in general, you know, you should have given Glada this question because I am not a marketer.
We can come back.
You know, right. You know, yeah, yeah. I'm not a great marketer, but but I've had to learn. And like you said, there are resources and there are a zillion things you can do. Social media is helpful, and you need to pick the one or two things in social media that you enjoy doing, whether it's Facebook and Twitter or Instagram or something to that effect. So that's one avenue. Multi-author events, I have found, are really, really helpful. If you can network with other authors, and there are wonderful Yahoo sites out there, Yahoo group sites, marketing for romance writers. If that's not your genre, go there anyway because they have fabulous marketing ideas for any kind of book. Indie Romance Inc. is another one. I mean, they have like over 1,000 indie published authors there that if I have a question about anything, what's working this week? I get 12 answers in 10 minutes, you know, from people who are doing it. So networking is tremendously helpful in terms of marketing. I've gotten involved with other authors who we do these group promotional events. I wrote a book called Savage Cinderella. Is it a Cinderella story? Not really. I mean, you can extrapolate the Cinderella story out of it, but that was the title, and that title really worked for that book. And so a very industrious author who also had a Cinderella-themed book, she got a bunch of us together that all have these Cinderella-themed books. We call ourselves the Glass Slipper Sisters. We're on Facebook. We have a huge group of following, and we do little promotions throughout the year where we promote our books. We put teasers, like the first chapters of our books, all in one document, and we uploaded it to Amazon. We had a nice cover done, and so it's like a teaser sampler. That's worked out really well, and we did it for the holidays last year, and we put recipes in it, and you know, all different kinds of little Cinderella things in it. You know,
that's great.
So if you know who your readership is, that's really the key, and knowing where they are and how to find them, and how to target your books and your promotional opportunities to that.
That's great. I think that's something that definitely in the indie community, you know, that the traditional publishing industry has typically been based on laws of scarcity, right? An agent says, there's only so many good books and I have them and you should buy them from me. And you see in the indie community a complete reversal of that. It's really an economy of abundance, which is if we're cooperating and more people know about our books and the quality of the books is what ultimately sells the books anyway, that's a good thing, you know? So you see a lot more cooperation among authors rather than authors trying to figure out how to beat another author.
And I have a real strong feeling about social media in that I don't think social media directly sells books, but it can certainly turn off a potential buyer very, very quickly. Hmm. And in that, I mean, there are so many authors who get on social media and all they talk about is buy my book, buy my book, buy my book. You follow them on Twitter, you get an immediate direct message saying, hi, here's a link, buy my book. Yeah, that doesn't really work. Where social media is powerful is where you can be authentic and you talk about the things that you seriously geek out over.
Yeah.
So because I write science fiction, I read a lot of science literature and I'm constantly talking about tweeting and on Google Plus talking about things that go under the rubric of the science of science fiction. Mm-hmm. So there was a whole thing about nanotechnology to control cockroach brains in Neuroscience Journal like a month ago. And I spent a lot of time tweeting about that thinking, oh, nothing could possibly go wrong with this, right? And that's the sort of thing people then follow me because they're interested in those kinds of things. And then they're like, oh, she writes science fiction books. Maybe I'll
buy
her book.
Yeah, right.
No, I agree with you about social media. I think a lot of authors, social media is essentially their marketing strategy. And it's good for engagement. I think it's good for visibility and brand building and, you know, to your point, you know, building those relationships. But I agree. I don't think that some authors might disagree, but the jury's still out on whether or not it's a powerful sales tool for selling books because, you know, I don't think it was initially created as a sales tool anyway.
Right.
You know, it was created as an engagement tool, and I think, you know, it should be, you know, treated as such. And I think that's why it's so important to your question about treating it as a business. You know, you have your author hat on, and then you kind of have to think about, well, where do I want to go with this? And where you want to go with your career kind of determines the things that you do and, you know, where you play, so to speak, and the kind of marketing that you do. And so I don't think there is any one magic bullet as far as marketing. And, you know, I think there are things that can work, but I really believe that you need an integrated approach, whether it's, meeting up with other authors like you talked about. That's pretty powerful, especially in the romance genre. Mm-hmm. And I know the Yahoo loops that you're talking about. So, you know, that's pretty powerful. Whether it's utilizing online advertising, there are a whole plethora of online book promoters out there. But I will tell you my one gripe with them. They build their readership on discounting authors' books. And so in order to advertise in their newsletter and get promoted, your book needs to be discounted, and I do mean deeply discounted. And so while I understand that as a tactic, you know, for that week or that month, you know, you're doing a promo to draw more readers to your book, I think it's dangerous long-term to an author, because my feeling on it too is if you went to work and your boss told you that, guess what, we're discounting your paycheck by 50%, that's not gonna go very well.
No.
But, you know, this particular universe, that's what they thrive on. That's the tool, the carrot, so to speak, that they dangle in front of potential readers to sign up for their newsletter. And so
and you have to figure out how to convert that activity
right.
to more mainstream.
And you know, the positive side of that is, okay, maybe somebody who, you know, never heard of me and they saw this book, I'm like, this looks interesting, and it's, you know, 99 cents. Okay, 99 cents, I'll give it a try. And if they like it, then the probability of buying another book from me, you know, grows. And so, you know, that's the logic behind it. But I just kind of worry that we've trained people to expect authors to discount their work after you spent years and months and poured a lot of resources and money into creating it, that on a regular basis it should be discounted.
Yeah. That works particularly well if you have a series of books.
Right.
It's just like getting your books in the libraries. If you have a series, I have a dystopian trilogy, I have the first book available for free on Amazon all the time, and it has exponentially increased the sales of the other two books in the series.
Right. It does work great.
So it works great for so discounting has its purpose.
Yep, it
but
does.
If you don't have a backlist or you don't have several books,
it
out,
doesn't
it's
exist.
Not
exactly.
Yeah,
right.
It's not helpful.
I mean, and that really is the premise of Selfie, right? Which is that idea that a sophisticated author would put the first book of a series in, and that would lead readers to the other two books.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So we got about probably 10 minutes left, I think, a little more. So I'd love to take some questions if anybody has them. We do need you to walk, if you could, just walk to the mic right here because it's being recorded, but you can address those to whoever.
We've trapped you. You can never leave.
Just a skinny little girl. Okay. I had a question about the library system, and I don't know enough information about this, but I heard that they will take a book and publish it or convert it to Braille or to audio. Do you know that?
I believe that does happen. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the decision-making process behind what books they do. And don't, Greg, do you want to speak to that? Yeah. These guys will know a lot
better.
Hi,
I'm Greg Pronovitz from the Massachusetts Library System, and I wanted to say that library services for the blind and vision impaired are centralized in Massachusetts at the Perkins School for the Blind. They have a service where they will create an audiobook for a person who needs it for visual assistance or blindness. I believe they also convert some books to Braille, but it's based on a need that they need to determine. So if you know a blind person who needs something like that, then I would work with Perkins.
My readership is blind to deaf.
Get in touch with
That's
Perkins.
That's a good one.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know how to do it outside of, you know, how to create an audiobook for the general audience, but I would touch base with Perkins just to, they have a library there. Yeah,
that could be interesting because if they did the conversion for you and you wanted to use that outside of Massachusetts, that might provide, and you were willing to pay some money for that, that might provide a nice model for them. That's great.
Nationally, you can have audiobooks created through a company called ACX, mm-hmm. which is also an Amazon company. And they produce, they do a 50-50 split or you pay for it up front. You can choose your narrator. From a whole list of great narrators who are actors, voice actors. Yeah, I have a couple of my books on audio. ACX, they're great to work with.
Mm-hmm. I'll go on my tippy toes. You mentioned reading blogs and newsletters and also possibly watching webinars to learn about marketing your book and all that. Are there a couple of top ones that you'd recommend?
Yes.
No, go ahead first. Go ahead.
So there's a wonderful blog called Writer Unboxed, mm-hmm. and I think it's one of the best. Writer's Digest consistently puts it out there as one of the top websites for writers year after year after year. Writer Unboxed, and it's writerunboxed.com, and they are phenomenal. One of the resources I want to put out there, if you're a writer, because there are a lot of scams out there, and writers are very ripe to be taken advantage of. So there's two sites I would recommend. One is called Writer Beware,
yep.
and the other is called Predators and Editors. And Predators is deliberately misspelled. It's P-R-E-D-I-T-O-R-S, Predators and Editors. And they are basically a clearinghouse for scams. So if there's a publisher or an agent or a press or an editor who is offering their services to you, vet them through those sources.
That's great. Yep.
No, I agree. I was going to mention those couple of sites. Also check out 100 Best Websites for Authors. Mm-hmm. 100 is a lot, but you'll be able to find some great resources there as well. And then for indie authors, Joanna Penn does a fantastic blog.
Yeah, I would add just one to that, a group we've been working with lately. I don't know how much you guys have interacted with them, but Indies Unlimited, which is more recently, but they really got engaged with Indie Author Day, and I got to know some of the people there, and they seem really, really helpful.
Hello, my name is Begwe, and first off, I want to congratulate everybody in terms of the hard work that you put in, and thank you for sharing your thoughts and ideas with everyone here. So we have about, 40 or so folks here. Also, to be transparent, I'm a proud brother of Glenn. And as a proud brother, and I'm going to expand the question, I really want to do and kind of help in any way, shape, or form I can. And so the question I wanted to ask to the panel is this. So as we look in the audience, there are people who wear many different hats, you know, whether you're a marketer, physical therapist, whether you work at a radio station, and you've been given so much. So my question to all three of you is, what would your marching orders be? What would you like from the folks that are here?
Reviews.
Yep.
That's great advice.
Yeah, connections.
Yeah. No, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to have more connections with libraries and go in and speak and run workshops for library patrons. It's just a little daunting to know who to talk to and where to go. So any way that we can connect and help each other out, because it really is a partnership, I think we'd all totally be down for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think, again, it's getting out there, meeting people, forming partnerships, networking. And the thing that I found about the indie author community is that it's a community. Yes, you have your sniping, but what I've discovered is they lift each other up as opposed to tearing each other down. So I think that's also very helpful, and that's reflected in partnerships that you talked about. You will see authors doing box sets together, for example, that sort of thing. But I think reviews are gold to authors. Literally, they are gold to us because that helps with visibility. That helps look at the books and say, oh, okay, so many people are raving about this book, I will give it a try. It's a great way for authors to get discovered. So those are absolutely critical, and they are very difficult to come by.
They are,
so
yeah.
In terms of marching orders, you talked about word of mouth, so when you discover an author and, you see...
Yeah. Spread the word.
Yeah, I'll talk fast. This book is great. Oh, fantastic, I'll read it. Well, guess what? Leave a review after you've read it. And then, you tell another person and another person. And of course, just, building relationships and paying it forward. I'm speaking next week at the Weston Library to an audience of aspiring writers. And basically just, okay, this is what I've learned so far. And I'm happy to share it with you.
Bring us home?
No, we can move on. They said it all.
That's awesome. Well, I think we're almost out of time. Can we get two more minutes? Okay, so if we want to get one more quick question.
I'll try to be quick.
Never.
My name is Susan Fleet, and I write a crime fiction series, the series protagonist. In 2013, they're pretty well reviewed and received, and I actually kind of made north of $10,000 in 1 year. However, my question is about Kindle Unlimited. I feel that the following year, I think it was 2014, that this was initiated by Amazon, which, if no one's familiar with it, it's people can pay $9.99 a month,
it's
and
part of
they
Prime.
Can read.
Yeah, part of Amazon Prime. Yeah,
not the
no,
Prime.
No, it's a special program.
Then different. Okay.
Kindle
okay.
Unlimited, they pay $9.99 a month,
gotcha.
And they can read whatever books are available under that. And the authors are compensated only by, according to page reads, and from my viewpoint, the amount of money that they pay me for page reads does not make up for the lost sales of my books, perhaps. And thank you so much, by the way. It's all of your comments have been very, very helpful. But perhaps you could comment about that situation.
Yeah, I can real quickly say, I have a problem with exclusivity of any kind. I think having, Amazon be the gorilla in the room is not necessarily great for everyone, because Amazon's not your friend. But as a marketing strategy, I have a series of 3 science fiction space opera books. I put book 1 in Kindle Unlimited because the people who read in Kindle Unlimited are unlikely to have bought the book anyway. So book 1 is a loss leader. I get page reads that I normally wouldn't get. And then they go on to buy book 2 and book 3, which are available wide. So as a strategy, it can work. But I think as a general practice, it's maybe not so good for most authors.
Perfect.
Right. No, I
agree. Great way to end.
Okay.
Well, thank you guys so much. And thank these guys.
Thank you.